The alleged appearance of the hepatitis virus is quite a story. Not content with just one virus, the medical establishment has since declared that there are many of them to fit a variety of situations. The books now list hepatitis A through GB, an alleged nasty team that are not part of the same family tree. What kind of shenanigans are the virologists up to? And how did all of these claimed viruses pop up in the literature? The wonky germ theory lens has been used to insert microbes into another famous condition. In this case, supposed viruses that even the inventors admit are difficult to show exist. But once again, all their roads lead to pharmaceuticals and vaccines, including vaccines for every child, and some more vaccines planned. Let's also have a look at how Pamela Anderson inadvertently exposed this ridiculous model of hepatitis. For what does the scientific evidence actually show? And what should you really do to keep your liver healthy for life? In November 2015, former Baywatch star Pamela Anderson took to her Instagram page to announce she was celebrating being free of hepatitis C. The mainstream media outlets picked up on this, presenting the story as the Hollywood star being chronically infected with a potentially deadly virus and then treated with wonder drugs. The Express reported that the mother of two has suffered with the blood-borne illness for 16 years after contracting it through sharing tattoo needles with her ex-husband Tommy Lee. Contracted through tattoo needles. We'd like to see a scientific reference for this famous transmission tale that has been propagated around the world, but it's nowhere to be found. The 2015 article then continues. In August, she reveals that she hoped to be rid of the affliction within a month after trying a new FDA-approved drug.
Sponsored by Pfizer.
Well, not this time, but brought to you by Big Pharma all the same. As reported on the IAC Media Empire-controlled site, health.com, Anderson didn't disclose the exact drug treatment that she took to clear the virus, but she did raise an important point about how few people have access to the new treatments. Will the drugs become more accessible in the future, as Anderson suggests? The answer is unclear, although drug companies and insurance providers appear to be working tirelessly to lower prices. Apparently, most people buy into the story, including the vast majority of medical practitioners. However, if you haven't already guessed, many parts of the mainstream account are as fictional as an episode of Baywatch. Let's take a journey into the science of hepatitis and then work out what really happened to Pamela Anderson. The definition of hepatitis is inflammation of the liver, and once upon a time, that was all it was taken to mean. The liver is a large abdominal organ and plays a huge role in detoxification of our bodies. It contains numerous enzymes, as well as the vital detox compound, glutathione. You can watch my video on that substance to find out just how incredible it is and what you can do to boost its function. Since ancient times, it has been known that lifestyle factors lead to liver disease. Historically, this has been obesity, overindulgence in rich foods, and excessive alcohol intake. Those of you familiar with Asterix comics may recall Chief Vital Statistics episode of hepatitis precipitated by such factors. Problems with the liver are often very serious, and liver failure is followed by death soon after in acute cases or over several years in chronic cases. When I was a hospital doctor, we sometimes witnessed acute liver failure as the result of overdoses of paracetamol, also known as Tylenol. Generally, the person who overdosed did not realize that whatever their intention, they would suffer a very unpleasant process of dying over a few weeks. While these types of deaths are uncommon, it highlights the importance of keeping the liver in tip-top shape so it is ready to handle any kind of toxin that makes its way into your body. It is also important to realize that taking medications like paracetamol will put your liver on the back foot, as it is consuming the glutathione in the detox pathway while it is busy ridding the body of an unwanted chemical. So hepatitis must be taken seriously, as whatever has led to the inflammatory state can subsequently result in severe sickness and even death. Historically, the most comprehensive approach was through a complete review of lifestyle factors, sometimes involving months at a health retreat for therapy with abstinence, artesian water, special diets, enemas, and saunas. These days, however, you are more likely to be sent for a battery of blood tests that supposedly inform the medical doctors what has caused the hepatitis and how to manage it. While conventional doctors are well aware of other causes of hepatitis, such as alcohol and drugs, including prescription medications, their training leads them to commence virus hunting activities. As the WHO informs them on its website, hepatitis viruses are the most common cause of hepatitis in the world, but other infections, toxic substances, e.g. alcohol, certain drugs, and autoimmune diseases can also cause hepatitis. If we go to the CDC website, for hepatitis B alone, they list the blood tests as hepatitis B surface antigen, hepatitis B surface antibody, total antibody to hepatitis B core antigen, and IgM antibody to hepatitis B core antigen. Following this is a chart listing all the possible interpretations of the results, including potential, quote, susceptible diagnoses, advising that those falling into these categories need to be offered vaccination. When I was a doctor in the system, I would have thought that all of this was established from legitimate science. However, as we'll see, it is anything but that. Whatever hepatitis virus they are claiming and whatever letter they are sticking after it, there is a fundamental problem. Where are the viruses? Let's look at an illustrative example of how imaginary viruses are used as backfill for a redundant model. In 2002, a paper appeared in the British Medical Journal with the title Clinical Course of Hepatitis C Virus During the First Decade of Infection, Cohort Study. Its aim was to follow the clinical course over a decade of patients alleged to be infected with hepatitis C. I guess they were expecting to find something dramatic, but their own conclusion stated, "Our study supports the view that HCV infection does not have a great impact on all-cause mortality in the first decade of infection. Like other studies, our results show that the influence of alcohol is independent of other factors and is exerted only at high levels of intake. If patients can keep their alcohol consumption to a minimum, their prognosis in the first decade of infection is likely to be improved." Wow, rather underwhelming findings, if not a complete fizzer. My Virus Mania co-author, Dr. Klaus Kuhnlein, made a response to the paper in March 2002, the month after it was published. He noted that in the study, they all found low liver-related morbidity and mortality rates, except in people who drink excessive alcohol. We don't need a virus to explain this. Going back to the roots of hepatitis C, we find in The Lancet, March 1978, Alter et al., that there was no transmissible agent found. Instead, blood from a patient with non-A, non-B hepatitis was inoculated into 5 chimps. 3 of the animals developed a transient elevation of aminotransferases around week 15. A control animal was kept in a separate room. The possibility of immune reactions against foreign blood was not ruled out. The control should have 5 chimps inoculated with blood of a healthy donor. At one of the last hepatitis C meetings in Paris, Michael Horton, one of the co-discoverers of the sequences we now call hepatitis C virus, asked the audience, "Who has ever seen the hepatitis C virus?" Answer, nobody did. My question, how do we know that a high viral load, which we are measuring with PCR, is indeed an infectious virus? There is no paper showing a correlation with free infectious virus particles visible with electron microscopy and a high, quote, viral load. Are we facing a PCR artifact? I am afraid we are. This anti-science in 2002 was nothing new for the virologists, as my husband Mark wrote in his treatise, A Farewell to Virology. The author has previously written in a postscript derived from A.F. Chalmers' book, What is This Thing Called Science?, that one of the pivotal issues with virology was that it invented itself as a field before establishing if viruses actually existed. It has been trying to justify itself since its inception. In this instance, a virus particle was not observed first, and subsequently viral theory and pathology developed. Scientists of the mid and late 19th century were preoccupied with the identification of imagined contagious pathogenic entities. When it comes to the isolation of an imagined hepatitis virus, even the virologists are reluctant to put forward many claims on this front. In 1984, a publication appeared in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology with the title Primary Isolation and Serial Passage of Hepatitis A Virus Strains in Primate Cell Cultures. The word isolation has no business here, because a review of the methods section reveals that as their starting point, they simply obtained various samples, such as homogenized primate livers or human fecal specimens, claimed to contain hepatitis A virus. They, quote, clarified their specimens by centrifugation and passing through a filter with 450 nanometer pores. They then added these samples to monkey kidney cells and lung cancer cells to claim they had, quote, infected cell cultures. And how did they know that they were infected? Because they detected proteins claimed to come from hepatitis A virus. Once again, we get to witness the pseudoscience of the virologists, where A, the word isolation has been detached from any scientific meaning and actually means biological soup. B, circular reasoning is employed whereby proteins are called viral, so subsequent detection of them is alleged to be evidence of a virus. And C, there is not a valid control experiment to be seen. It is apparent that these authors have built their case on a house of cards, as they stated in the introduction. The successful isolation and propagation of hepatitis A virus, HAV, in cell cultures was first reported by Provost and Hilleman in 1979. As the virus was not cytopathic, their success was attributed in part to the development of sensitive immunological tests for HAV and to the use of readily cultivated marmoset-passaged virus. Curious, a non-cytopathic virus.
What the hell does that mean?
That means whatever the hell you want it to mean.
Anyway, this is where the plot thickens, because Provost and Hilleman never claimed to isolate a hepatitis A virus, although they thought they were, quote, propagating one. Amusingly, they state in their paper that though propagation of human hepatitis A virus has been claimed by several workers during the past several decades, these purported agents were found to be spurious isolates and not the virus of hepatitis A. Spurious isolates. But now these guys are claiming that they have the real thing without any physical isolation in sight. In this paper, they state that Deinhardt et al. Provided the first evidence for propagation of hepatitis A virus in marmosets. So let's go back to this original 1966 paper with the claim in the title that there was transmission of human viral hepatitis to marmoset monkeys. Straight to the methodology to expose that they took blood from humans who were acutely unwell with clinical hepatitis and then injected it into the marmosets. Sometimes this caused the marmosets to have an inflammatory reaction with elevated liver enzyme blood levels. However, they noted that none of the animals with abnormal hepatic tests and or with histological evidence of liver damage exhibited any signs of overt illness. There was mention of a control experiment, but this consisted of some injected plasma that was already known to cause no reaction in human volunteers. This is not the scientific method, and no independent variable was identified. Aside from the fact that this imagined pathogen is supposed to spread via the fecal-oral route, and they resorted to unnatural direct injections, where is the virus? At no stage in history has any scientific publication demonstrated a replication-competent, infectious and disease-causing particle that results in hepatitis. The whole history of alleged viral hepatitis comes down to the medico-pharmaceutical industry building castles in the sky. There is no need to invent hepatitis viruses when it comes to explaining Pamela Anderson's case. She never had a virus, simply a, quote, positive blood test result with an antibody assay, or the detection of RNA sequences through PCR amplification. As we have seen, no hepatitis virus has ever been shown to exist. So, at most, the detection of these protein classes or genetic sequences are a result of the body's reaction to an insult. Anderson's lifestyle has been tragically typical of many Hollywood stars, immersed in a world of alcohol, drugs, tumultuous relationships, cosmetic surgery, fad diets, and generally unhealthy living, the kind of lifestyle that leads to damage to the body and overwhelming of the liver's detox system. She never picked up a virus from Tommy Lee. The only thing she could have picked up from him was bad habits from his well-known toxic lifestyle. You'll also see claims that some of the imagined hepatitis viruses are transmitted via blood transfusions in pregnancy, but all of the supposed evidence fails to take into account confounding and coexisting environmental factors. In any case, this is downstream from the pivotal fact that they cannot demonstrate a virus in the first place and are simply using the same phony diagnostic tests. Once again, and as much wiser ancestors knew, hepatitis is one of the end results of wrong living. Our lifestyles and environments are what need our full attention, not imaginary viruses and the dirty vaccines and drugs that have been dangerously pushed in another phony war from the germ theorists. We cover the story of Pamela Anderson and so-called hepatitis C in Chapter 4 of Virus Mania. In the book, we dismantle all alleged viral illnesses and explore what really causes illness to move towards a better health paradigm. This waste matter is poisonous, and comprehensive provision has been made for extrusion. A most important duty of skin, lungs, liver, kidneys, and bowel is ridding the body of waste, according to the kind and quantity of poisons and eliminating organs chosen. Appearances vary when reaction sets in. Volumes of fetid filth are sometimes thrown out through the liver or lining of stomach and vomited up. Dr. Ulrich Williams, Terrain Therapy. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com